Welcome to Recess Duty, a podcast for educators to come together to share struggles, but also celebrate successes by sharing stories and ideas in a safe and supportive environment to collaborate with one another. Here's your host, Levi Allison.
Hey everyone, this is Recess Duty with your host, Levi Allison. And today we are talking with growing PYP educator and my dear friend, Megan Gless. Megan, thank you so much for joining us here today. How are you doing?
Hi, Levi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great. How are you today?
It's been a wonderful, wonderful week. As you very well know, we are on holiday here and you flew all the way up here to spend time with me and my pup, Weston. So it's been a great time today.
It has been a great time.
So Megan, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am currently in my second year of teaching at Prem International School in Chiang Mai. I was, as you know, an intern at Chadwick for 2 years beforehand. So it's been nice having my own classroom in grade four. I'm originally from the States. I'm from Connecticut. And yeah, I've just been enjoying traveling and, you know, becoming a educator for these wonderful kiddos that we have.
What a crazy time it is to become an educator during COVID. And another part of the reason why we love Recess Duty here is we try to bring all walks of life, new, veteran, traditional, non-traditional educators. And so I love having your perspective because you always come up with the most insane and quirky ideas that just make kids so excited to learn. And it's so much fun to watch the kids in your class. So tell us a little bit about what we would see in your classroom.
So in our classroom, I like to say with the kiddos, so that they have some ownership over it, you would see a lot of hands-on activities. I have a lot of EAL learners. So you would see pictures and vocabulary and a lot of translanguaging in the classroom so that it's very active for them to be able to see. You would be seeing the Rachel French inquiry cycle up on the wall and different engagements that we've done in each phase of that. You know, in grade four, we're trying to get them prepared for the PYP exhibition next year. So as much of the PYP that I can throw at them and have them go through the process to really prepare them for grade five, I think that's basically my main job as a grade four teacher, is to really prepare them to get to that point in grade five.
And that's something that doesn't just land on the grade five or four teacher, but it is a culmination of their entire experience within the PYP program. And one of the best things I've ever heard was that every unit of inquiry should be like an exhibition, maybe not as drawn out or as exciting or a big deal, but it should be the same level of engagement, the same level of student ownership and agency and questioning. So, and I love that you brought up translanguaging, because having known your class and seeing all the stuff that Marianne, your assistant principal, does within your class, can you talk to us a little bit more about what that translanguaging culture is within your classroom?
So I think that there's two different aspects of it. There's one where I'm trying to get them to learn new vocabulary and the harder words that they might not have heard, like the context-specific words. And that's part of, I will translanguage it for them. So I will go and translate it into Chinese and Korean and Thai for them so that hopefully it brings up something that they know. But it's also a way for them, when I ask them, what do you already know about this? They can write it in whatever language they know anything about it. So one of my girls is Korean and she knows so much. She's such a smart cookie, but she just doesn't know how to say it or how to write it in English. And it's really, if you're showing what you know, I don't care what language it is in, as long as you're showing me, like, I love to know that you can make connections with something and that you know something about it so that I know where I'm starting at. So it doesn't matter to me what language that's in. And I think that's something that as educators, and no matter where I'm at, they're always like, oh, but you know, they speak so much, whatever language within the classroom. And yeah, it's true. And I get frustrated by that too. But when they're talking about what we're doing and they're just relating it to what they already know, I think it's a beautiful thing to really connect to that. Mm-hmm. So I think there's the aspect where I go and translate it, but then there's the aspect where I have the kids really translate it and go find the definition and put that into their own language as well.
Because that skill is a tool within itself, mm-hmm. to go find that new word, to look it up, to read about it, to make it make sense to yourself. It's one of my favorite things to do now that we use iPads extensively in our classroom, is when a student asks, what does this symbol mean in music? And I'm like, oh, let's look it up. And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, well, we have these really smart devices. Let's look it up and see what it is. And it causes such a spinoff about, oh, it also relates to this aspect of music, and that's why it's important to look like this. And it's just so much fun to see kids take ownership of that learning of and using it instead of being afraid and being scared, I can't speak X, but using it as a way to be like, yeah, I can't speak X, and I know how to solve that. I know how to go and figure it out. I know where to go and solve the problem and help my other colleagues.
Yeah, it's like they take ownership over it, and it's like they can feel so empowered and so much more powerful that before they might not have felt like that because they had no idea what the word was. Mm-hmm. But now they have background and they have an idea of what it is, and they might even know what it means, and they might even have seen it or heard it or used it before. So like when I think about, like, right now we're talking about forces, and it's like they have no idea what it is, but when you put it into Google Translate and they see it come up and they're like, oh yeah, I know what that is. And like,
and they make connections to it.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's a beautiful thing. And I think it's something that having in the classroom is so important, no matter where you are in the world. It's so mm-hmm. helpful.
Agreed. And I've gone through my own personal journey of what translanguaging means in my classroom, and having some students who come into my class that don't speak Korean or English. I'm thinking of one little girl from Spain who only spoke Spanish. And I remember Alyssa Smith and I, and a little bit of you actually, using Spanish for the little that we know to connect with this girl to make sure that she was safe, she was heard, she was taken care of, and she knew that she was welcomed in a community that otherwise couldn't connect or relate to her. And again, I always say I love using Google Translate, and I love using the kiddos and students as tools to also help translate, because I find it so empowering and so exciting when some students are like, oh, I don't know what that means. And then other student says, oh, I do. It's this. And then they tie it into an idea of what that means to their lives. So coming to be a new educator, what are some things that you were excited about? What are some things that you wish somebody would have told you way back when? And what are some misconceptions you would like to share with new teachers going out?
I'm just excited about, you know, the constant learning that's continually going on, and that even though I've now done my units like last year, but they're completely different this year with different group of kiddos, and you're constantly learning new skills. So I think that it's just so exciting, because you're never an expert, no matter how long you've been a teacher, no matter if you're a new teacher or an old teacher. And like, I'm probably at my school, I'm probably a teacher that has been teaching less than anybody else there. But I went straight from the States into mm-hmm. my international career. And I think that it's just so neat to see what different aspects we bring to it. And it's just, I don't know, I really do love teaching. I love the kids. I love that we're all learners. I love telling my kids that I am no way do I know everything in the world. Mm-hmm. And like the shock that I get in their face, like every single time that I tell them that I am not an expert. And they're like, what? They're like, you don't know everything? I'm like, no.
Absolutely.
We're learning together. And I think it's great that we just learn from each other. And my kids teach me so much. So I love being able to learn more about them, more about things that they're interested in, but just, I mean, I know so much.
No, I agreed. And connecting with what you're saying about being an expert, I am not the world's greatest musician by any stretch of the imagination. And I love when a student shows me a piece of music that they're playing on violin, and they're like, oh, can you play this? And I'm like, no, I can't play violin. They're like, but you're a music teacher. And I was like, yes, I'm not a violin teacher. And so it's just very interesting because there is that kind of like catch all, like we're expected to have such a wide range of knowledge about such things. Mm-hmm. And it's always fun to see the kids' face when they're like, no, we're also learners. We're also continuing to learn. We're also finding new things to inquire about and so forth. Speaking of which, are you inquiring or have any wonderings that you're looking into this year?
So that's a hard one. I am starting my master's this year, so definitely inquiring into how to balancing, schoolwork and work and having a life also, which isn't a thing when you're doing your master's and that. But I think that in my classroom, I'm really inquiring just to making the PYP really visible within my classroom. So when you walk into my classroom, like you're going to constantly see my students' work up. You're going to see the inquiry cycle. You're going to see us making connections to the key concepts. And it's all just very visible. And I think it's great that they feel so powerful because they can put their work up on the walls. And I think that it's so important for them to be able to see it. Like I have a hashtag proud board on my back and, I just really made my classroom or our classroom a lot better this year. I feel like last year, being a first teacher somewhere, you're just, making your classroom look the best isn't your top priority. Mm-hmm. It's really making sure that you're teaching your kiddos something and learning with them. And I think that over the summer and, before I left, I was able to put my requests in to make my room just like so much more welcoming and, mm-hmm. So that the kiddos are more excited and having more things for them. So I think just inquiring into how to make those connections and how to make the PYP so much more visible in my classroom for the kiddos.
Exactly. And I connect with you so deeply on this because when I started teaching, not all that long ago, to be honest, I thought and truly believed that I had to have that Instagram worthy picture classroom. And I would go to all the stores. I remember bringing back suitcases full of Target stuff to get back into Kuwait to make that classroom. And I realized, A, the kids did not care if it was color coded or anything. Yes, it helped them a little bit, but once they figured it out, it did not matter to them. And also, it didn't impact learning. Like, it was so overstimulant. It was so blurry. And it was just, it truly made me a little bit uncomfortable the more I thought about how much stuff was on my walls that did not serve student learning of any matter. And so through that, and I had that inquiry, and my favorite person told me, and it was at the beginning of my third year in Kuwait, she did nothing to her classroom. She put everything, including the boxes, the desk, the boards, everything in the middle of the room, took down every single thing, and that was it. That was the provocation. And I remember thinking, this person is crazy. This person is crazy. How are they going to get student ownership on this? And can I honestly say those students took care of that classroom better than any classroom on our campus because they designed and voted on every aspect of everything, where the board was going to go, what bulletin boards were most important, where were the desks going to go, where was the teacher desk going to go, are there a need for desks? It was a really powerful thing that I saw, and I was very happy to see make its way through different Twitter posts, and it was awesome. I loved it.
I tried to give my kids as much ownership as I can in the classroom, and with that being said, like I always ask them about, oh, what should go on this board? Where should you put your work? Where do we want to hang our work? Do we want to hang them on the lines? Do we want to hang it on a wall? Do we want to put it outside? So I think that definitely is. And if it wasn't for COVID, I probably would be the teacher to have them move their desks around and figure out the configuration too. I don't even have a teaching desk. I don't want one. I hate it.
Well, it just makes, I like it because then I can control some aspect of my very organized, chaotic room sometimes. Because when you have 20 xylophones and a bunch of violins and some cellos going around, it gets very chaotic. So I know that my desk is a little bit of a safe place when things go a little crazy. But yeah, no, for sure. And I totally get it.
I sit at a table with the kids. That's my desk.
Yes. That was one of the things I loved most about when I was scrolling through during my master's program was the mobile desks of principals and teachers, where they just had like a trolley that they would just move around to wherever they were. I thought that was really clever, but they were very expensive, so I did not get one.
I think that's what I need, because I end up just picking a desk to sit at, and then I put my stuff there, and then feel like I'm in the way of everyone else, and I'm constantly moving like papers and stuff, and I'm like,
for sure.
Oh, I just need a trolley. That's on my wish list.
So Megan, being a growing PYP educator, and I love that you asked to be called a growing PYP educator, because yet we are all growing, but you are like proudly stating you are a growing PYP educator. And I think it's something to be celebrated. How are you growing, and how would you recommend other people to grow in their knowledge and understanding of what PYP is?
So I take a little aspect of it at a time. So last year, I really focused on my units of inquiry and trying to really understand what do they want our kiddos to learn during this unit, and still giving my kids agency and where it goes and to see where it goes. But really, I just take a little aspect of PYP at a time. So I really focus on my units of inquiry. This year, I'm really going to focus on writer's workshop. I think that is my literacy as my main focus. I think that it's something that I didn't do well last year, and just being in a new school, trying to understand everything, you know, so it's something that I'm really going to focus on. But I would love to be able to focus on like inquiry math and just bringing the inquiry cycle into everything that we do. So we can bring the inquiry cycle into literacy. We can bring it into everything and anything that we do. So I think that it would be great to be able to do that. And I would just say to people learning about the PYP is PYP is a huge thing, and you have to just start small. You have to start somewhere, but you have to start small and do it bit by bit. So, and it doesn't happen overnight. It happens, takes years upon years upon years. So,
and trial and error. Like, we never know what is going to be the thing that connects with our kids the best. But we also know that if we don't try, we're not going to find it out. And that was the way I did it was, and it was not my favorite way. I wish I could just read a book and I knew it, but this was not how it was going to be. And my first coordinator was like, always telling me, Levi, it's one day at a time. It is not a sprint. It's a marathon. And she's like, and no one's taking a time. It doesn't matter when you finish.
Yeah.
And that was something that was really, really appreciated way back when. Yeah. At this,
I think, like, for me, I'm constantly failing. I don't know if failing is the right word, but I'm constantly realizing that, oh, this isn't going as planned, or oh, yeah, what I thought my kiddos can do, they really can't do at this stage. So, you know, really dialing back. So it's constantly adjusting. Like, I don't know how many inquiry journals I made for my last unit of inquiry so that we can go through the inquiry process together on domain of well-being, like whether it's physical health, so that they can like do research and inquire into it. And I don't know how many times I changed that journal and had to re-upload it to their Google Classroom and re-upload slides, take away slides. Oh, it was a mess. But it just shows that, you know, we just have to adjust to our kids, and it still is differentiating, but it's still expecting them to do. It's not like giving them less of an expectation. It's still expecting them to do what you want them to do, but just in a different way. So I think that you constantly just have to readjust, and it's okay if what you thought was going to happen doesn't work. Like, I'm constantly reflecting, and you know, that's okay.
That's awesome. And Megan, real quick before we end, what are some really stellar examples that you're super proud of that worked really well in your classroom so far?
That's a hard one. I think just because I think that what I'm super proud of is, thanks to my lovely PYP coordinator and assistant principal, Marianne, she brought to me graphic organizers. And one of my favorite graphic organizers is a fire model. And with EAL kids, I think it's so important for them to be able to draw a picture, give a definition of something, and be able to give examples of what it is and what it's not. And I think it's just so powerful that such a little thing can go such a long way for these students. So anything visual. I also like color symbol images, and it's something that is attainable for them. But that's something that I'm really proud of, is being able to bring in those little small lessons and activities that really makes the difference to these kiddos. I will say that the well-being unit of inquiry of who we are really might have been one of my favorite things that I've done so far this year, along with how the forces work, because we get to make Rube Goldberg machines. And I think that it really shows like how creative they are and how much they just want to build and create. So actually we have creative hour on Friday afternoons now. And I think it's fantastic because my kids already made like a marble run machine. And I think it's just like going to be so much easier when we go into our unit, because they've already done part of what we will be doing, and just to see them be able to either build something new or, you know, expand on that. So those are some things that I really have enjoyed and really thought were spectacular.
Yeah. And again, what a great example of student agency and honoring those passions and making it work for the curriculum and not the other way around. I see so many people asking, well, how can we get all these passions and exciting things when we have content and curriculum to cover? And I always think about it, I was like, it's not black or white. It's not this or that or either and or. It's a combination of both. How could you go through the curriculum in a way that is different than how you plan? Through maybe a marble run, you know, maybe it's through rebuilding out of recycled materials. One of the best things I ever do in my classroom is we build instruments out of recycled materials to talk about sharing the planet. And the students go crazy in their ideas of what it means to be more recycled, what it means to be more conscious in how we use materials. And better yet, the materials we use, how can we repurpose them later on? And that's something that we talk about in a music class, because we're building it through a lens that makes sense for them. And so I really appreciate that. Megan, where can people find you to connect with you and to continue learning with you?
So I am on Twitter. I try to use it. I go through my little spurts of using it. Mm-hmm. So definitely on Twitter. And I know you'll put that username in your show notes.
Megan, we ask all guests here at the Recess Duty the same question to bring back a little bit of nostalgia and go down memory lane. What do you remember about recess growing up?
I remember playing kickball. I think kickball was just one of my favorite things. We had a big field. Of course, we had a giant hill that we had to walk down and then back up, which I was not happy about. But, you know, a giant field with a baseball field, two baseball fields at the bottom. And we would just spend all recess playing kickball. Sometimes we would even play on the pavement. That was not safe. But yeah, kickball. It reminded me of softball, and softball was my favorite sport. So that was my favorite thing about recess. It was pretty boring, pretty, you know, typical.
That sounds awesome and a lot of fun, Megan. I wish we could have played kickball together. Thank you, Megan, for coming to this week's episode of Recess Duty. Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss our next episode. I'm Levi Allison. I hope you have a great day of learning, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Recess Duty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, please share this podcast with other educators so they can join the fun. And that is the end of our Recess Duty.